I am thrilled to share this episode with you today. In fact, I'm going to say that this is one of my favorite episodes that I have ever done on the podcast. And I know picking favorites is a really tough thing as a host, but here's why I've done that. See, as a communicator, as a podcast host, one thing that I've learned over the years is that people that have a high level of intelligence and competency are able to explain things in very simple terms. Imtiaz Patel does that, and he does it better than almost anyone that I have met. In this episode today, you're going to learn about change management. And frankly, what that means for you is you're going to understand how to work with your team a lot better. You're going to understand how to create filters so that you can differentiate yourself in the marketplace. And then you're going to talk, we're going to talk about the core competencies that you as a business owner should have so that really your company can grow. This is an incredible episode, and I think you are going to be thrilled to just listen to this. It may be even an episode that you want to listen to over again. I know it was one of those for me. So let's jump right into the interview with Imtiaz. And we're going to talk about, one, his work and previous history with Deloitte, him working at the Wall Street Journal, and adding hundreds of millions to the bottom line, and really what he's done in his business. So let's jump straight in to what Imtiaz is talking about.
It's been kind of an interesting career arc for me. I started in banking in London. I grew up in London, went to college there, and the banking part of it was useful, interesting, and important because it gave me a very strong kind of financial background to the work I've been doing. And at the time when I came out of college, it was a deep recession in the UK. And so we focused a lot on working with our clients to kind of restructure their debt and driving cash flow and profitability. And kind of post-business school here in the States, went into management consulting with kind of a dual focus. One was around growth and taking companies and trying to understand, especially if they've stalled in growth, how can we recharge growth? What kind of new concepts they incorporate? How should we be really thinking about repositioning the business to grow, developing new concepts? And then that went hand in hand with a lot of work around restructuring and cost reduction. I kind of went from post-business school at Kurt Salmon, went to a couple other consulting firms, last of which was Deloitte, and then went into a role at the Wall Street Journal where this was a time, this was kind of end of 05, early 06, when everyone thought print newspapers were going to die and really thought about how could we grow the business, save money where we can to reinvest in other channels. And we were able to kind of grow the business top line by, I would say, about $300 or $400 million, bottom line by a couple hundred million dollars over a course of 4 years. And that, while every other newspaper was declining, we became the number one newspaper growing. My biggest issue was how not to grow, because we just didn't need the growth from a circulation perspective. And I've kind of leveraged that into a number of different things post there as well, where I was head of strategy for the Children's Place, launched my own business, sold it at the end of last year, and now I'm consulting and helping companies with same kind of issues.
Wow, that's quite the roller coaster. So you exited last year. What was the primary driver for you to decide to come into this next venture?
Yeah, a couple of things. The business I'd started was a platform for to connect consultants with companies. And a lot of times clients would come to us and say, hey, we need a consultant for this kind of issue. And I'd look at the issue and I'd be like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I'd love to work on it myself. But trying to build a platform, I couldn't do that. And I really felt more and more that I wanted to get back into dealing with issues myself, working with clients, and getting back into the consulting game. And that was primarily what drove me. And it's been fantastic. I've had about, I don't know, 4 or 5 clients over the past 8 months, and it's kept me super busy. And all the issues are different, but all around growth and profitability.
Okay. So as a role of, you know, we'll call it growth and profitability, as you're looking at the financials, what are the other elements that you're looking at to determine the health of a business and to determine if it's stalled or if it's something that just needs to be chopped and needs to be completely torn apart?
I think there's a few things. So financials are absolutely essential. That's the, kind of the starting point. So you look at the top line revenue, you look at the profitability. And I'm working with a client right now, and if you look at their business, their private equity buyout, so they're trying to cut costs and reinvest in areas of growth. And what we're finding is that the growth is harder and they've got so many disparate businesses. So we look at all the different businesses and say, how much overhead is it actually taking that's not reflected in the direct P&L? So would our attention be better spent on focusing on a few businesses rather than diluting the executive management's attention across a lot of different businesses? So we look at attention. Yeah, and you also want to look at what's happening underlying in terms of the market. So who's the direct customer? What's happening with the customer? Are the customers evolving in terms of what they need? So it may be that right now it looks like the business is okay, but if you look at trends at a customer level and changes in their industry and how they're thinking about their business, does that foreshadow a change coming in a year or 2 years that we need to get ahead of and start thinking about how we develop products or exit certain businesses because the market may be right now to exit, but in 2 years it won't. So you have to look at your customer base as well and think about that. You have to look at one of the things we're looking at with this PE company is what are the core competencies of the business? Are there things we shouldn't really spend the effort on? So for example, should we, a lot of our procurement, should we just outsource it to companies that have greater buying power and skill at procuring services and products for us? And so we can then pay our attention on what's really going on in our business and what's most important for us. So a lot of different things to look at there.
Up next, we're going to be talking about the core competencies. And really what that means for you are the core things where you should be focusing and what you should be doing in your business. And I'm going to give you a hint. Most of that is removing yourself from that business. And really what that means is you need to go look at what your management style is, what your team is doing, and find ways to optimize and automate that. Now, what we're going to talk about are how to differentiate yourself in the marketplace, and this is absolutely critical regardless of your business category. So let's jump into this section of the podcast episode.
Every time I think of this, I start from the perspective of what is it that differentiates me and will allow me to win in the marketplace? If I understand that, that allows me to then think about, okay, what do I need to be really good at? And what is my point of differentiation? So for example, if my business, I'm competing on a really simple example, if I'm completely competing on price, which say a Walmart does, what do I need to do to strip out all costs and only single-mindedly focus on driving costs in my business? So my core competency has to be around cost control. Now, if I'm a business that's focused on innovation and coming up with new products all the time, that is where I'm going to invest my effort and my resources. And I need the talent who can develop new products. I need to keep abreast of what's going on in the marketplace. Everything else is kind of a necessity to run the business, but I don't have to be really good at it. So can I outsource procurement we already talked about? Can I outsource if you've got, I don't know, multiple location facilities? We're even talking about kind of other recruiting and hiring things that I could outsource. So do I go to something like a RPO model there? Anything that really doesn't have to do with my market-facing capabilities. Now, One thing I will say at the center of all of this is the talent that you have, and you got to make sure that the kind of people you have on board, the culture you're creating, you can't outsource that. You have to create a culture that supports your strategy. Give you an example. When I was at the Wall Street Journal, we had a business that was struggling. It was declining a few percent every year. This isn't the core newspaper, but we had a number of ancillary businesses too. And one of the things that I really wanted, that I thought would turn around this business, is if we had new ideas. And we had a culture which was really risk averse, and I needed the team to really start taking some risks, come up with bigger ideas and not worry about failing. So culture to me became actually a core competence that we had to create within the organization. So we started coming up with a lot of ideas. It was okay to fail at things. I always used examples of stupid ideas that I had that we failed at. I thought they were good, but they were bad. So creating that culture, and the culture became a core competence for us, because at the end of the day, that is the main differentiator.
So as you were mentioning previously, you're currently working with a business that's going through this. And this is kind of a, for our audience to understand, this is a pre-interview conversation. And so what I would love to do is incorporate that into our podcast here, because as you're talking about culture and change management, that signals something has to be done, and it has to start with those people. So without disclosing who that company is, tell us what you're doing. What's the thought process?
So a private equity firm bought this company as a buyout from another larger company. And the deal model that the private equity firm had is, let's grow the top line, let's shed some businesses that aren't making so much money, we'll get some cash for it, and let's also cut costs somewhere in the $75 million range over the next few years. So there's a fundamental shift going on. They need this cash to reinvest in growth areas of where they can grow the business, because the market is changing as well. So a number of the things we're looking at around this, the simple one is we are making some headcount changes as well here. So there will be a downsizing in the organization, but typically the areas we focus on there are underperforming operations, things, and areas where we can take people from kind of higher cost locations like in Europe or in the US and move those staff to kind of lower cost countries like India. So that's one aspect. Now, the second is, are there areas that we can outsource big chunks of activity? So for example, and this is why procurement keeps coming to mind, we are looking at going out to a number of different sourcing companies and seeing if they can take over basically some of our contracts or negotiating some of our deals so we can cut costs. So that's another area we're looking at. The third area we're looking at, some businesses that are just not profitable enough, don't meet our benchmark, do we just sell them? Because that then kind of curates a much more focused business that has a lower cost base as well. Then we're looking at all the technology that we have and the systems and saying, do we have the right things? Are the tools good enough to allow us to do what we need to? So we're finding that a lot of the systems are old and we need to upgrade them. So in the short term, spending money, but longer term, it's going to give us more flexibility and actually be at a lower cost base. And then we're adding automation to the business. So we're using a lot of data science tools and algorithms to do things that used to be done manually in an automated fashion right now. So those are kind of all the different components going on right now to reduce the cost base, but allow the business to continue operating effectively, actually more effectively.
With all these pieces to the puzzle, is there one of one of those items that takes a priority, or are you listing all of these as items and you're assigning them out to sub teams? How does that work for you?
So with this client, we've got roughly about 30 to 35 different initiatives underway at any one point in time, and they are assigned to different people in the business. So one of the things we feel very strongly about is the people in the business have to own the initiatives. We could go hire a ton of different consultants to get these done, but I don't think that creates ownership in the business, or you come up with solutions necessarily that are always right for the business, being a consultant myself. So these are assigned to various owners in the business. This all bubbles up to an executive team that then reports out on what's going on with all the different initiatives. And my job here is to make sure all the moving parts are moving at the right schedule. We're getting the results that we hope for. Because going into this, we created a series of initiatives. And we said, okay, do we think this initiative is going to save us money? Yes or no? How much? By when? So we put a schedule together, and then we put a project plan around this, and we're kind of tracking how all these things are happening. If you don't have a project plan and a target you're aiming for, you pretty much get what you get. But we look at how everything is progressing and how if things go off track, how can we bring them back on track? What are the contingency plans? How do we mitigate some risk? So you're planning, you're very planful about these things.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how to pick the projects that will move your business forward and how to get your team to take ownership with that. We're also going to talk about the strategies that you can use to communicate that plan with your team, because getting the team on board is absolutely critical. We're also gonna be talking about having big wins versus little wins. And MTL shares a simple story that was mind-blowing for me of a $60,000 win versus a $3 million win. I have shared this story with so many business owners since I learned this from him. And it's a practice that we use internally, meaning in our business now, we say, is that a $60,000 win or a $3 million win? And that's the new filter that we've created. Perhaps it may be a filter for you.
I'm a big believer in treating people with intelligence and communicating what you are planning to do. In the absence of communication and understanding of why we're doing things, people feel void in with the worst possible scenario. So I believe we should be getting ahead of this, which is what we're doing. Crafting a message that talks about what the long-term vision is and why this is necessary. And I think once you do that, you'll find that a number of people will buy in and get on board. Now, there are always people who will worry about it and not be on board. And what you have to do with them is keep the information and communication consistent. So this starts at the top. Let's say it starts at the CEO level. And then it goes down to the executive leadership team, who then kind of filter it down so everyone's singing to the same tune. That's one. Number two is you got to keep reporting back on progress. And let's say we're going to have a headcount reduction, or if we do have a headcount reduction, you need to say this is going to happen. And which areas, as honestly as you can. Talked about reporting on progress. Then there are people, what you also have to have is a forum where people can feel safe to talk about their kind of what they're worried about and how it'll impact them. And they need to be given the time to do that. So that's kind of the whole communication piece of it. And it's huge. A lot of companies don't spend enough time on that. And that is a fundamental mistake. Then we've got to start thinking about how do you track these initiatives to make sure everything is going on schedule and we're going to deliver the results. Otherwise, one of the things I've noticed with a lot of my clients is the day-to-day business gets in the way. There's 101 things to do every day, and that ends up taking precedence. So you've got to kind of keep them honest, keep everyone on track, and help them through that process. And the other piece is, like, the executive team, the leadership team has to be made accountable for delivering the results as well. If they're not accountable, their team, it sends a message to the rest of the organization saying, oh, the leadership team doesn't care or is not that invested, so why should we? And this client that I've recently started, actually started working with them in April. What I found when I got there was the initiatives were being run by people lower down in the organization, and therefore they had a lower level of commitment, and also the size of the opportunities that they were going after were relatively small. I'd rather work on a few big things than 100 little things. And we found that they were working on too many little things because the executive level hadn't really focused on this or bought into it themselves. So those are kind of the things. And you'll notice that a lot of this is really around the softer side of communication and bringing the team together. And that is critical in a successful program versus an unsuccessful program.
Can you give us an example of a big thing versus a little thing so that our listeners can have something more tangible?
Sure. So one of the initiatives that the team was looking at this client was around commissions they paid to some of their third-party agents. And they spent months working on this. At the end of the day, it saved them, for a billion-dollar company, it saved them, I think it's going to save them about $60,000. That's a small thing. On the flip side, a lot of their business could do with automation. And if we invested the right amount of time and the right resources around automating. So one of the things they do is they take content and they tag it, and then they resell the content. It's currently done as a very manual process. If they automated that process of taking the content in, tagging it, they could potentially save $2 to $3 million a year. That's a big initiative.
Okay. And would that have been the same time investment for a big thing and a little thing?
The content piece would probably take about a year versus the 6 months for the little thing. So 2x in time, but potentially 20 times the benefit.
Okay. So complete no-brainer there. And yeah. I cut you off. You're keeping on going.
There's other big initiatives you could look at. So these guys have a lot of facilities around the world. One way to really come up with a bigger idea is, rather than just looking at, oh, can I negotiate the rent down a couple of bucks a square foot? Should we be thinking about consolidating offices? Do we need to be in every major center that we're in? So some of the office locations have 10 people. Well, why do we have 10 people? If you think about the secondary cost, it's not just the cost of having a facility. But now that you've got a facility, those people need to travel to other locations to meet other people, or people need to travel in there. So now you have the travel cost as well, and just HR cost of managing those locations, things like that. The cost is a multiple of what you think it is. So it's a little harder, but it comes up with a bigger opportunity if you really fundamentally ask the question, why am I doing this? Do I need to do it? And I think one of the reasons I had a lot of success at the Wall Street Journal, so at the Journal, they learned very quickly to give me businesses that other people had failed to turn around, because I had no sacred cows. I would look at every business and say, well, why are we doing this? This does not make sense. You almost have to ask the silly questions, the stupid questions. Why are we doing this? And does anyone care if we did this or not? If you come at it from that perspective, I think you can come up with some very good answers, and instead of just doing things how it's always been done.
Wonderful point there. You know, I wish that we could sit and talk further, because I'm looking at my notepad here and I'm writing down some of the core concepts, which are the big versus little things and the concepts of vision. I have two questions left for you. And I know we were slated for this time slot. Do you have room for two more questions?
Absolutely.
So here's the first of those two questions. One, how do you create a better culture of communication with a team that is interdispersed and outsourced? Because you mentioned one of the things that you're doing to grow is you're using economies of scale. So how are you creating that culture of solid, good communication that's outsourced?
I think it has to be, you've got to use multiple mediums. And I think the regularity is very, very important. So I work with another client. It's a smaller firm, and they have about 100 people working for them, but they are all over the US, all over Europe, Latin America. They don't have anyone in Asia yet. And so you can imagine there's a couple of people here, a couple of people there. And the key for them is a regular cadence of email that talks about progress, what's going on. And that happens, like, everyone should expect it once a month on the same day, so they know it's coming. Number two is some type of video conferencing or webinar, like a virtual town hall for them is very important. Again, you can do that on a quarterly basis. Number three is the management team has to have much more regular interaction where they're talking about things that are going on in the business. So, for example, with them, I just have scheduled, I before our call, I was on a call with the European team and the US team to make sure everyone knows what's going on. Because then the management team can filter down. I'm a big believer in filtering down conversations as well, and everyone I'm talking to the same message. So I think between those different channels, the regularity, and then leveraging your management team or call them culture or communication captains in different locations whose job is to make sure that communication happens. Now, that's top down. What you also want to make sure is there is communication filtering up. So you need to create forums for that from the different locations. People need to check in. And the face-to-face, you can't, that doesn't get enough credit. The CEO of this company, she spends a ton of time traveling the world, meeting with people. She has a really good pulse on what's going on in people's heads. So the two-way communication is very important there.
So it sounds like you have to take a two-sided approach to it. One of the clear, consistent communication, but then it's also the executive team traveling around, seeing people face-to-face and being involved and knowing that they actually are boots on the ground, that they care.
That's right.
What should I have asked you in our interview that we didn't get to today?
It's all around change. And I think not enough companies, and I think the question really is around thinking about the external environment and the competition and how that impacts your change program. And I think too often companies look inwardly and say, I need to change because my revenue is not growing enough, or my cost structure is too high. But you really have to start with the external environment and think about your customers, what's going on in their business that impacts you or will impact you eventually. And B, what's the competition doing? Because at the end of the day, to me, business is all about game theory. You got to react to what your competition is doing and what your customers want, because you don't want to be so focused internally that you're losing sight of that. So I think that's a key aspect in any change program that you have to think about.
Wow, you're really taking I would say, like, an empathetic role of not just the bottom line, but you're looking at what's happening in their life. And maybe you'll be able to spot things before the competition does. That's a great approach.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I would encourage our listeners, you know, we've heard this and you may have taken some notes. And some of the things that our listeners are going to walk away with today is they're going to realize that we all have the same amount of time, but we're getting a myriad of different results. And you can work on things that make a $60,000 a year difference, or something that's going to bring you millions of dollars. I would hope that all of us would be focusing on the right things. They can follow up with you at accgrowthsolutions.com. How else can our listeners get in touch with you?
They could even call me. That's not a problem. My number is 917-365-5487. Happy to take a call anytime, even if it is someone just wants to bounce something off me. Happy to do that.
Okay, wonderful. And are there any social platforms that you prefer to be connected on that people can reach out to you?
The only one I really use is LinkedIn. So they can connect with me on LinkedIn, and happy to chat through there.
Perfect. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I'll make sure that in the show notes, we've got a link to your website, to your LinkedIn, so that people can get in touch with you and ask questions so that they can have some greater change in their business. So thank you for spending more time with us today, Imtiaz.
Great. Thank you, Spencer. I really appreciate it.
One of my major takeaways of this episode was that we can create some major wins in our businesses just by having the right filter and the right focus. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Imtiaz has an amazing skill to simplify the complex. So if these things that we've shared with you today have been really helpful, I would encourage you to go to his site at accgrowthsolutions.com, or you can just call him at 917-365-5487. Now, here at Business Growth, we are not affiliates. We're not being compensated. This was just a wonderful interview, and it was something that I thought was helpful. Again, as I mentioned previously, we're already using that filter of saying, is it a $60,000 win or a $3 million win? And we're applying that to our business. And I hope that you can apply some of these principles to your business so that you can have growth. Now, if you like this content, what we'd love for you to do is make sure that you hit the subscribe button, share it with your friends, and leave a review if you haven't done that already. We have some amazing things in play this year that is going to make the podcast even better. The best thing we can do is hear from you and hear your unique stories so that we can learn about what's going to make this show better for you. So if you do have any questions, comments, and ways that we can make the show better for you, please reach out to me. You can send me an email at spencer@businessgrowthpodcast.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Spencer Shaw, and I will definitely answer any of the questions that you have. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.